Hello and welcome to this episode of 100 Heroines Voices podcast series with Jeff Nicholson. Jeff is a British novelist and writer whose book Bleeding London serves as inspiration for 100 Heroines project Gloucesterama, photographing Gloucester street by street. In this podcast, Jeff discusses how his books celebrate the overlooked aspects of city and suburban life, and how we can celebrate these through walking, writing, and photography. Listen on to find out more. Hello, Jeff. We're very excited to have you on the podcast today and to talk about Gloucesterama and how your book, Bleeding London, has served as inspiration for it.
Hello, I'm very pleased to be here and I'm happy to talk about that or anything else that comes up.
Recently, 100 Heroines has just moved to Gloucester. And so what's happening is that we're enlisting the help of volunteers and anyone who can help create a photographic archive that showcases all the streets of Gloucester. And so this is 2,061 streets, and the aim is to have a picture from every single street. And this was inspired by your book, Bleeding London. And so if you could talk a bit about your book and how this has created sort of different movements to photograph cities, which has also happened in London before.
Sure, I can do that. In 1997, which seems a very long time ago, I wrote a book called Bleeding London. Yeah, so, I mean, it's so long ago that it's almost an historical document, but then I suppose all novels are historical documents at some point. And there are a number of characters who wander around London. And the chief one, as far as this project is concerned, is a guy called Stuart London, in fact. And he decides to walk down every street in London because he's got a copy of the London A to Z. And as he walks along, he puts a line through every street as he walks it. So eventually he ends up with this map, which is completely useless because you can't see the names of any of the streets. It just becomes this very, very abstract pattern of black intersecting lines, some thicker and some thin. And I think the idea that's in there is that when we move to a new city, I grew up in Sheffield, 20 years in Sheffield, then 20 years in London. That some of us, the chance to move to a new place is an opportunity for exploration. And the first few years, anywhere I ever went in London, I carried a map with me because I didn't know where I was going at all. And there is that sense of wanting to know the city, to explore the city. And there may be some sort of sense in which you want to make it your own so that everybody has their own version of London or of anywhere. It's Nicholson's London or it's Mr. Smith's London or Inez Nathy, if I'm pronouncing that. How do I pronounce your name? Inez Nathy?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, and there's Nathy's London or Gloucester or wherever. And so you kind of want to make it your own. And in a sense, you want to control it and possibly to exhaust it. But in the end, the cities aren't exhaustible. They renew themselves. They change minute by minute, day by day. And anyway, so the novel was quite successful. It was probably my greatest hit. And after being out for a few years, I got an email from this person that I didn't know from Adam called Del Barrett. And again, I didn't know whether she was some, well-meaning student or in fact, I didn't even know whether it was a man or a woman when it was being called Del. And she said, she was thinking of doing a photo project of Bleeding London, based on Bleeding London and this idea of walking down every street and taking a photograph. And, and I said, go ahead, because I always say go ahead. And, so often when people approach writers for these kind of projects, that's the last you ever hear about it. And I think one thing I should probably say is that there's been an awful lot of film interest over the years in Bleeding London. And one of the obstacles that has never been overcome, and it seems to me fairly easy to overcome, is that Stuart London, this character who's doing the walking, he keeps a diary, a verbal diary. And it always seemed obvious to me that if he were going to make a movie of it, it would be a visual diary. He'd either take photographs or he'd shoot film or video. And this seemed to be what Dell's project, which was also called Bleeding London, but what it addressed, that, you know, as I walk, being a writer, I tend to jot things down, or, you know, mentally jot them down and then maybe write them down when I get home. And even before I thought of myself as a photographer, and I don't really think of myself as a proper photographer now, but I take a lot of photographs. Even before that, I was taking photographs. I've taken photographs all my life, not in a very serious or very systematic kind of way. So anyway, so when Dell said, you know, let's do this project, I said, fine. And, you know, she got on with it. And, you know, before we knew where we were, there was this vast exhibition, vast numbers of people involved, and the exhibition at City Hall in London. And it was a, you know, a huge success. And, you know, I felt enormously gratified and grateful to Dell. You know, and it showed just what can be done, how many people are out there and who are doing the same kind of things that I am and that Dell is. And that I just say, you know, that we're all walking, we're all looking, we're all thinking, we're all observing and recording. And we often don't know what to do with these images or records, and putting them into a kind of archive via Bleeding London, you know, is a resource and a place for them to live. And obviously, once you start thinking about London, can it be done in London? Can it be done anywhere else? And it obviously could. It could be done in New York or Tokyo. But anyway, so now we find ourselves in Gloucester. And obviously it's a much smaller project in terms of streets than Bleeding London was. We used to debate just how many streets there are in London. The full-size London A to Z, I may have got this wrong. I think it contains 58,000 entries.
Right.
But not every one of those entries is a street. So, you know, one of them would be the Albert Hall or Grosvenor Square. So it wouldn't be a street per se. And I think you just said that Gloucester's what, 2,500?
2,061 streets.
Right. So, I mean, a mere bagatelle by comparison.
Yeah.
But even so, I mean, as I begin to know Gloucester, and I know it's slightly because my partner, you know, I go down there with her, and we do a lot of walking and exploring and taking photographs. And it's very much what I do anywhere and everywhere. But, you know, every street in Gloucester, every street in London, every street in the world contains wonders and curiosities and things to look at and things to observe. And, you know, and you go home and you think about them and you think, oh, yeah, well, there was, you know, there was a model of Loch Ness Monster in the front garden of that house there. And wait a minute, I think there's another model of the Loch Ness Monster in another house 5 miles away. And these sort of connections and, I mean, maybe narratives, you know, because every street has a story. And I mean, as a walker or somebody passing through, you don't know the full details of the story. You get little snippets of the story.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you've just mentioned walking. And I think that this is, walking is such a big part of this project, whether it's photographic or as the character in your book, Stuart London, does walking and noting down sort of different narratives. And I was wondering a bit, I know that you're familiar with Gloucester and how you've come to know Gloucester and how you see walking as a valuable way to uncover these stories.
There is some sense. I mean, obviously, when you first arrive in a place, you tend to be on a train or in a car, and you know, you zip down the road and you get this overview. And because I'm, you know, an urban explorer, for want of a better word, I often see things and I say to myself, oh, hold on, if I'm in the bus or in the car, I'll say, oh, that's interesting. I'll come back and have a proper look at that tomorrow. And, you know, when you're on the way to see one thing, you inevitably see other things. And I don't know, I mean, I don't think this is a very unusual thing. I mean, I think it's what we all do to a greater or lesser extent. Walking for me is a way of, I don't know, it puts you more in touch with what's going on around you. Obviously, it's more so than in a car, because the car's going by at 30 miles an hour and you're going, whereas you're walking at 3 miles an hour. But I am aware that some people do kind of wander around without seeing things. And there's something about what I do, you know, the walking, the writing, the thinking, the taking photographs, which all seem to connect. And I wouldn't really go so far as to say it's a form of meditation, but it is a way of kind of raising your awareness, raising, you know, and again, I wouldn't go as far as saying it raises your consciousness. But there's something about the pace of walking and the pace of thinking that it just sort of makes you more in touch, more aware of what's going on around you. And, you know, for anybody, but especially for a writer and a photographer, or any other kind of artist, that's obviously what that's the game we're all in. We all want to look at the world and understand the world and find the curiosities about the world.
Absolutely. I think it's also a very democratic project, at least this. If you have a camera, you have even your phone and you can go on a walk, then you can take part. And it's really about finding sort of the interesting things in maybe seemingly mundane or everyday, the streets that you walk past and that you maybe don't stop and think twice about. So I think it is a very, it's a great way to kind of shift your perspective a bit.
Yeah, I mean, and democratic as well, in the sense that, not all streets are created equal, but there is a sense in this kind of project that all streets are equally interesting.
Absolutely. You know,
you don't have to be standing in front of Gloucester Cathedral in order to see something spectacular. You know, you can be walking down the road and there's an old wrecked Volkswagen in somebody's front yard. That fascinates me as much as the cathedral.
Absolutely. And your new book, The Suburbanist, which is focusing more on suburbia, you went to suburban areas in different places, you said, in the States and in the UK. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been fascinated by suburbia. I mean, partly because so many people either hate it or just neglect it, or, you know, they think it's a place to turn your back on. You know, it's a place where dull people live. And, you know, I suspect that most of us do live in suburbia of one kind or another. And quite often, you know, again, as part of my urban exploration, if I find myself in some strange place, some new place, you know, Tokyo, for example, I went out, you know, through the back streets to look at the houses, to look how people lived, where they parked the cars, what they grew in their front yards, that kind of interest in detail, I suppose, rather than, and of course you want the big overall picture as well. And I think that, you know, also I realize that I probably have lived in suburbia for the majority of my life. And of course, you would think that a man who's written a book on suburbia would have an absolutely cast iron definition, but I don't, and very few people do. But I mean, for example, when I lived in the States for about 15 years in Los Angeles, and, you know, by some standards, Los Angeles is the most suburban place on earth. And I was, you know, I was just fascinated by that. I'm fascinated by how people live anywhere, but that sort of that desire to have your own little plot and to have your own front door and your own driveway and you know, and your garage and your garden, I mean, it seems to me a very very intense human desire or a human urge to say, you know, this is me, this is mine. And, you know, I've lived in flats, I've lived in lots of flats, and, you know, was quite able to live there. But in the end, you find yourself settling, or I found myself settling. I'm now in a little sort of bungalow, chalet, as it's called, out here in Essex. And, you know, it wasn't a huge choice to live here. I was looking for somewhere to live, and there it was. Anyway, the way in which this connects with Bleeding London and Glosterama and urban exploration in general and the book The Suburbanist is that although The Suburbanist is by no sense a book about walking, I did find myself going to various bits of suburbia around England and to some extent in the States. You know, in London, in Bristol, here in Essex, up in Sheffield, where I come from, even down in Cornwall. And, you know, if I went to visit somewhere or visit someone, I'd say, oh, give me an afternoon, and I'd go off with the camera and my boots, and I'd explore some bit of suburbia that I hadn't seen before. And, of course, there are some sense in which all suburbias resemble each other, but there's also that sense that suburbs are all unique and that some of the impulses are the same, but the manifestations are different. So although it's not a walking book, it's got that same sense of covering territory, of putting boots on the ground and seeing what's to be seen.
Absolutely. And I think also, as we were saying, trying to find the beauty and the interesting aspects of places that have maybe been not so glamorous in popular culture. Suburbia has a reputation of being maybe quite boring or not where the exciting parts of life are happening. And so thinking about how, yeah, maybe some streets you would never think to stop and take a photograph or to try and find the interesting thing about it. So it is kind of all about shifting your perspective and taking the time to find all the little interesting knickknacks, because there always is.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm a Buddhist, I'm not a very good Buddhist, but I do like this idea of Zen. You know, you stare at the garden gnome, you experience enlightenment. You know, you look at somebody's new extension, and you see the world in a different way. Yeah, I mean, it's what I do, for better or worse.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I think seeing also how this linking into photography and writing and seeing how maybe the motivations aren't all that different, the desire to create an account and to really take the time to look into the small details of life is very interesting. So I'm sure that it has motivated people to pick up their cameras and put on their boots and go walking.
Yeah, get your boots on, get your camera out, go walking in Gloucester or anywhere.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information about Glosterama, visit 100heroines.org/Glosterama and join the Facebook group of people and organizations taking part in creating a photographic archive of Gloucester. For more from Jeff Nicholson, check out his walking blog, hollywoodwalker.blogspot.com, as well as his newest book, The Suburbanist.